everyone, welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening in the greatest county in the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I work at the best high school in the world. We have some great interviews planned for 2022. We just want to thank you so much for listening to our podcast. On this episode, we have an interview with my friend and one of the amazing school counselors that I've known over the years, Bob Bardwell. He is currently a director of school counseling at Tahtasquaw Regional School District, and he's also the executive director of the Massachusetts School Counselor Association. Bob has served on several local, state, and national committees advocating for school counselors. He's also a huge advocate for equity and access. He's a humble leader, and he's going to share some great tips on leadership and some of the things that they have going on in Massachusetts. So I'm excited to share this interview with you guys, and I hope you enjoy it. Hi, everyone. I'm with Bob Bardwell. I'll go ahead and let him introduce himself, and if you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Bob Bardwell. I'm the director of school counseling at Tahtasquaw Regional High School in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. I'm in my 29th year as a school counselor and director of counseling, and I've been fortunate enough to have lots of great opportunities in my career to serve locally, statewide, and nationally on several boards and on several committees, and excited to be here. So thank you for having me.
So speaking of all the committees that you've served on, you have been a leader in the school counseling profession. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And did anyone encourage you or give you your first opportunity to lead?
So sure. So I have been fortunate enough to serve locally at the state level and at the national level for both the school counselor associations as well as the Association for College Admission Counseling at the regional and national level. So I've kind of done both worlds. Typically, if you're a school counselor leader, you do one or the other and not both. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to do both, and I still do that today. So being a leader is not for everyone, but what it does for me is allows me to still maintain that passion for my day job, because it's easy to get burnt out. It's easy to have a bad day, and it's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day politics and stuff that happened in your schools. Yeah. But for me, when I can leave that and go do some other work for my profession, either at the state level or national level, that is really exciting. And it actually what drives me to volunteer to do many of these things is that I've met many great people like yourself and others, you know, across the country and the world that do this work. So that's really exciting. In terms of my first opportunity to be a leader, I think it was with my local school counselor association, and they were looking for a reservation person. So we would have dinner meetings five times a year, and they were looking for somebody to collect dinner reservations and checks.
Nice.
You had to pay for it. So that was back in the mid 90s. And I volunteered. They said, sure. I'm like, I want to get involved. And this was a job that I had open. Luckily, I didn't do it for very long, because it was, I moved on to the treasurer or something else with the organization. So I didn't have to collect checks very long. Obviously, now it's all done online, but it was really cool. I don't even remember who the person at the time was that said, yes, you could do this. But I'm grateful, because that led to one other thing and then other things. And then that led me to where I am today. So I have luckily had a great journey. I've had many great colleagues who have supported me in this work. So I've been able to be out of my building, because that's a real challenge for especially a public school counselor.
Yes.
To be able to get out and travel and do these things that I've been able to do. So I'm very fortunate that my district was supportive of these opportunities.
Well, it's been an honor to serve with you on one of the NACAC ad hoc committees. So I've been able to see some of your work and also seen you at some of the conferences. So it's been an honor to have you as a friend and colleague. What is your biggest takeaway over the years as a leader? And do you have any advice for someone who wants to lead?
So the biggest takeaways, I would say, are that there is a huge need. And obviously, this is a time of COVID and time of when people are burnt out and just tired with their day job. So yes. Asking people to volunteer or do something extra on top of that is really challenging. So I totally get it. As I said, in my world, it helps keep me going, and it keeps me able to do my day job because I have these opportunities. It's sort of like, you know, if you're a teacher, you go on a field trip and that's kind of exciting, or you have a club or activity that you advise. And so you get these other sort of moments of, you know, a break, and it just changes your attitude and your outlook. So for me, as a leader of an association, that's what keeps me going. And like I said, the need is great. If you build it, they will come. Here in Massachusetts, our state association just did a weekend director of counseling class. And, you know, it took effort to put it all together, but we had 28 people that showed up for a Friday night and Saturday class. They paid money for this, and they were excited and energized and totally into it. That's what keeps me going. I mean, I didn't go to the class myself, but I was involved. I welcomed them, and I made sure the meeting was running, and I got, you know, I made it all happen, or helped make it all happen.
Yeah.
But to me, it's the idea, like, that's what, as a leader, you get to see your fruition of your work. So you get to see the opportunity, like, hey, I'm going to plan this event. You get to see it through. Or, hey, I'm going to, you know, write this article that people are going to read, or I'm going to do whatever. So, you know, regardless of what organization you volunteer for, and I guess you could say the same in your community, you know, whether it's be the Rotary or your church or wherever, these organizations depend on volunteers. And if people don't step forward, I often say, if not you, then who?
Mm-hmm,
if nobody steps up to help lead, then it's going to be, the organization's not going to exist. And I know many organizations that have folded because they don't have leadership that are willing. And, you know, then to me, it's the question of, well, what's the value? And, you know, what's the problem? You know, one quick story is so the Massachusetts School Counselors Association, of which I'm the executive director. I guess I should have said that in my intro.
It's okay.
My side job, if you will. So on top of being a full-time director of counseling and doing all that during the day, my evening and weekend job is being executive director of MASCA, which again is the Massachusetts School Counselors Association. And so I'm going to say this just because it's a fact. In June of 2019, when I started in that role, there were 869 members. And now there's, you know, not 3 years later, there is 1,668 members.
Wow.
About a 92% increase in membership.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. I swear I didn't go out and make these people up, and I didn't just give free memberships. that, you know, but yet giving some discounts or maybe incentive or rewards or something. You know, but every organization, you know, if you're a business, whether you're, you know, for profit business or a nonprofit like us, you got to do something different. You can't just do the same thing. So the point is, we have some excitement. We have some energy. You know, when we announce that we have the most members ever, that's something that, you know, people get excited about, and we do some really great PD. So we've created this energy and opportunity, and that's just not me. It's about all the leaders in the association and the people that are doing the newsletter and the people that are doing, you know, Zoom meetings and all the stuff that we do is not just me. So I might be the leader, but it's also the volunteers that help, and they're leaders in their own way. So it's encouraging others to take on those leadership roles. And obviously I'm a leadership person and I'm a volunteer person, but I would say, you know, if you're stuck in your day job, try to volunteer somewhere. Like I said, even if it's not for your profession, do it in your community or church or your school or wherever, because that will give you some energy to perhaps get through your day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love giving back, and especially to our profession, it energizes me. I get to meet people like you and others that are just so passionate about school counseling and love their job and just really want to help. So when I see and meet people like you, it just gets me excited. So I couldn't agree more with you. In your opinion, what makes a great leader?
Well, you could read theories of leadership. There's all sorts of, you know, different types of leaders and everything. But I think, and it's not a lot different than what counselors do, is you do a lot of listening. You do a lot of providing advice or guidance. You provide them with opportunities and structures, and you make them feel good. You know, if you want people to follow you, you have to give them a reason to do that. And so you need to communicate. You need to articulate. You need, you know, what's your vision? Where are you headed? You need to get people excited. You know, if you look at history, there's been some really great leaders who have done really bad things. And there's been some not so great leaders that, you know, people don't follow. So I think for me, in the leadership roles I have been in, is to, which, you know, I've been in several, is to make people excited and feel wanted. So we just, you know, in Massa, we just gave our board members, which we haven't done before, all of them, they were, and some of our other volunteers, a free registration to our conference. Like, I want them to go. And so, you know, that costs money, you know, we're losing money. So instead of you, if you were a chairperson or on the board or did one of our volunteer roles, you're going to get a free conference because it's important for me for you to be there, mm-hmm. to celebrate you, to say thank you, to appreciate you. And yes, so it's going to cost us some money in the long run. But what I'm hoping is it re-energizes my volunteers and my leaders. It makes them feel welcome and wanted, and it gives them the opportunity to come together with their colleagues, which they may not have seen in 3 years in person. Yeah. So, you know, you have to think outside that box. Like, if I was only, and luckily the organization is financially able to do that. You know, it's not like we're losing money left and right. So we were able to say, yeah, we're going to forego, because technically we'd ask them to pay either out of pocket or have their school pay. And now we're not going to get that revenue. But what I think it's going to provide us is a better bang for our buck. And so, yes, we'll lose some money on that, but we'll create some opportunities to say, wow, I was valued, I was appreciated, I was supported. And now I'm going to go, which I don't know if I would have gone before. And B, I'm going to feel better about the organization because they just gave me something. It's not about money necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's about the recognition and the appreciation. So I think that's really important, is that we have to recognize, especially this year with COVID and all the other stuff we're dealing with, how important recognizing these volunteer leaders are.
Yeah, that's so true. And I've seen that over the years with great leaders when they show appreciation and just recognizing, you know, whoever's giving back in the little ways, like, it really energizes everyone to continue to do the work and even do better and go above and beyond.
I had a staff person the other day, just taking it to the school level, where I gave him a little note and a little treat, because we're headed into our second semester and it's a crazy time of year. And I just said, you know, I appreciate you, I value you, and I thank you. And she came in and she started crying. She's like, aww. I haven't really felt that way in many years. And you know, even, and we don't agree on everything, and, you know, she might not like every decision I make, but at least she knows that I care about her and I value her. And I'm, you know, willing to go out and buy the tree and to write a note that took me, you know, all of like 2 minutes to write.
Yeah.
It's not you know, it's not like I'm giving her $100. It's not like I wrote a whole page. It's the thought that counts. And so to me, that if I can do that for my volunteer leaders in my association worlds, then they will be more willing to step up and say, yeah, I'll do that, when you maybe don't want to do that.
Yeah. Even a thank you note goes a long way, because you took the time just to thank them for whatever they're doing.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. You served on the ASCA board during the former First Lady Michelle Obama's introduction of the Reach Higher initiative and her support for school counselors. Can you talk about what that moment meant for you?
So that was probably one of the highlights of my professional career. So in, I think it was 2014 or 2015 in Orlando, Florida at Disney, the American School Counselor Association conference was being held, and I was lucky enough to be on the board when Michelle Obama was there. So I was able to go and wait forever. And you think like, oh, she's coming right away. Well, no, she's not even close to being there. So we waited forever, but we got, the board at the time got a chance to have our picture taken. And I stood right next to her. I actually have this picture in my office.
Oh, that's awesome.
Standing right next to my right shoulder, which I said I would never, I mean, we actually touched shoulders. I mean, she shook my hand as well. But anyway, so then being able to sit and listen, and that's still online. You can download it. If you want a feel-good school counselor moment, regardless of your politics, whether you voted for that party or not, this is just, you know, take politics out of it and just talk about, here's somebody really prominent and important who's doing what I think is good work for our students and their communities. Here's an opportunity to really feel good. And actually, I know you are an adjunct professor, so am I. And when I teach my class, I show this video just to show them, this is what you feel like when you have someone like that talking about school counselors and what we do. Hearing that speech every time, it just makes me, and I get chills, because it's just like, wow, this is, we've never heard someone like this with such importance and power talk about us as a profession. And it was just like, you know, I get why people go to rallies and to, you know, do political stuff, But this wasn't political. It was about kids and what we do. But just, you know, obviously she had a great speechwriter, but she delivered it in a way that just made me feel so great. So what I did is I left Florida and I came back and I said, I want to do what she just said. So I started working with the folks in Massachusetts to bring together a coalition, which is still in existence today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Entire Massachusetts is still going. A little bit different. I'm not as involved because I've got other roles, but it was really important to me to create this opportunity to bring everyone together. So her basic message, and you certainly know about the Reach Higher movement, is to help more kids aspire to reach their goals. You know, initially she talks a lot about college, and that certainly is important, but we also know that for some kids that's not where they're headed. So military, yeah, going to work, whatever their goals are. So we modified that to be, you know, graduate from high school and to seek further opportunities, whatever those may be, whether they're educational or, which everything's educational, but, you know, military, going to work, or into some sort of program for more education. So while college is certainly part of that, it wasn't the only thing. So I worked with the state folks. We had, we'd have upward of 30 people attending our meetings. This was before Zoom and virtual. But we did some really great programming and some opportunities. Because, and my thing about that, and that sort of ties into my leadership philosophy, is everyone is important at this table, whether you are, you know, the Secretary of Education or a director of something, or you had a little money or no money or a lot of money, wherever you were coming from, you were there for a reason. So the school counselor who has no money or power necessarily, as far as like agencies and organizations go, but had a passion and an interest, wanted to show up and be at the table, they had this an equal seat as to someone who came from an organization that had millions of dollars in a budget and they had a fancy title. We were all in the room together doing the same thing, and no one was better than the other. A lot of times when you do some of this coalition work, you know, you are have a title, you have resources, then you get something special, or you're treated differently. And when we were at that table, I made it very clear that if this was something I was involved in, that it was going to be, we're all going to be the same, you know, even if you did have resources that I didn't have, but that at the table, we were all the same, because too many people sometimes get intimidated. In fact, that's what happened with the very first Reach Higher summit that they had, which was well-intended, but it was limited in size. It was, at Harvard. And so you only got invited if you were on the list.
Yeah. Or you knew somebody.
Yep. And they had to limit people, but a lot of people wanted to go. And there were a lot of people that were, I don't say angry, maybe angry or hurt that they didn't get invited. And I understand what they did, why they did it and how they did it, but that didn't mean it made it better for those. I mean, I was fortunate that I got invited, so that was cool, but yeah, that didn't, you know, a lot of people who didn't get invited. So that led me to the work we do in Massachusetts, at least, is everyone's at the table. Like, you don't need an invitation.
Yeah.
You have a place regardless. And when we did meetings, and we'd actually pulled off three convenings of Reach Higher, which is really exciting. We brought hundreds of people together. The first one we did was a New England one. So we had all six, and there were people from other states too. And we had over 200, or actually over 300 people show up. It was amazing.
Wow.
Awesome. And this is when, you know, Michelle Obama was still active in doing some of this work. And then we did two state convenings afterwards in subsequent years. And those were good. Didn't have as many people, but that's okay. But it still was free. That was one of the big things. You didn't want costs to be a barrier. You had to get yourself to that place. But it wasn't like you were going to be charged $100 and that you couldn't afford it. So we made sure that it was, you know, sponsored and covered enough so that we didn't have to charge people. So those were some really exciting moments that came as a result of the Reach Higher work. And the team, you know, over the years, we attended some of the national things. They don't do that much in that really anymore. But the idea is that we were all there working for students and supporting communities and families. The work is still necessary. Just, you know, we're obviously it's done a little bit differently these days. But there's a lot of kids that are still not graduating from high school and not going on to do something after high school. So that's a concern, and we need to still address that.
Yeah, that's so true. I personally wasn't invited to those convenings, but I'm more of like that behind the person who likes to be behind the scenes. Like, that's more me. So as you can tell, like, I really believe in the Reach Higher initiative. So I'm passionate about that. My students, my former students joke that Michelle Obama is my best friend, but I've never met her. So they've all met her. So I'm excited for them. That makes me happy, brings me joy when we see the kids go on for education or of course, graduate's the number one priority, but when they want to do something with their future and they get there, that's the big celebration. Can you tell me one of your favorite moments as an educator?
Oh, wow. So I've been doing this a long time. So I've got lots of moments. I guess, I'll just pick a recent one. Again, there's many. I just moved jobs this past summer. So I'm new in my new district and, you know, I don't have a caseload there. And that is fine in the sense, like, I have plenty to do. That's not a problem. I don't have the same opportunities. And so I don't have the same interaction with kids right now. But I did have a student who I was working with just for a lot of various reasons. And I could just see, it was working. You know, he was getting what I was trying to help him with, and he got to a better place. So that is a very small example. And like I said, I could have many, both, you know, in my district and out. But that was one where it's just like, wow, it's almost like I still have it. Like, I can still help a kid. I can still do this work, even though I'm in an administrator role. And it was just nice that, you know, I felt like, I might be a little rusty in the sense I don't do it every day, but I could still help. I guess the other part I would say is, I told you about staff member that I made cry. That wasn't necessarily the good part, but it's just that that I have had a positive influence on people. And, I'm not one to like want the limelight. And that's what, you know, when you had initially asked me to do this, I'm like, no, you got other people that are more important. And then I finally was like, well, I can do this. I'm worthy. But it's just that I don't like a lot of public attention. So this whole idea of, you know, the mask of membership increase, it's not about me. It's about the organization. It's about the other people. Yes, I certainly play a role in that, and that's fine, but I don't want it to be, you know, because of me. It's because of all of us. So I don't like that individual attention. So yeah. I'm not one to, you know, oh, let's give me an award, or let's, you know, do the limelight. I don't need that. I'm happy to, especially as a leader, like I lead in many ways, but you might, you know, say you're on my board and you only get a few opportunities. Let you shine. Let's give you that opportunity versus, you know, me who always is doing stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm happy to encourage and support my colleagues either internally or externally to give them those opportunities. So probably corny example, but it's one that, you know, I think when you work with kids, you have your moments of, wow, I really made a difference. And that's what keeps you going, especially in a year like years that we've had with COVID, and that it's not normal. It's not right normal in any sense, but it requires us to step up and be even better. Like, how do we be stronger when we're hurting ourselves? And that's what I tell my grad students and my colleagues. It's like, yes, school counselors have to be better than everyone else. We have to rise above it. So because the relationship we have with our staff and our communities and our administration, if we don't maintain those, then the next time we need those people for the next kid, we're not going to have that because we burnt a bridge or we got mad at them or whatever. So even though they probably deserved to be treated in a way, they did something wrong or you're frustrated with them, you can't go down that road because then you're not going to be there for the kid that needs you next time. So you got to take a high road in a lot of cases, and it's not always easy, and it's not always fun.
Yeah, but I think it's so important that you're on this podcast because you have a lot of wisdom to share with everyone. And I think it's really important that they hear it. And I know you don't like being in the limelight, but it's important that you give back and sharing your knowledge. So thank you for sharing all that.
You wore me down, Priscilla. You wore me down. That's okay. That's a good thing.
But you're also a lot of fun too. Like, we go to baseball games and we go to the national conferences, and I know we've been to a few together. So maybe you could tell me your favorite baseball stadium that you've been to, whether it was a tour or an actual game that you went to over the years.
Well, I'm from Massachusetts, so I'm going to have to say Fenway Park. even though we didn't go to Fenway when Astros was in Boston the last time, and I didn't do the tour because I've been there, don't need to do that. But I would say just because when I was a kid, my mother would go every year. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I'm all about trying new things. And so when we started this little tradition at ASCA, I thought, great. And so, then it's like when we go to a city that doesn't have a baseball team or they're away during the conference, it's like, oh, that sucks. probably shouldn't have said that. Anyway, that's not good. But we do definitely, you know, the camaraderie, that's been another great thing, especially serving, you know, on the ASCA board and doing my state level work that connects me to other leaders nationally, is the opportunity to spend days and weeks with these leaders from across the country and the world. It's just, you know, the conference experience is so awesome. So whether it's a baseball game or eating out or perhaps a place where you might get a drink, any of those experiences. In fact, so this past summer I went to Vegas for, you know, we didn't have the conference in 2020 was canceled, 21 or went virtual.
Yeah.
21 was back in person. And that was just, it was weird, but it was also great, like to be back with our peeps and being, you know, in Vegas. At that time, it was before the, you know, things got worse again. So it was kind of a nice, you didn't feel too unsafe, but clearly, you know, masks and all this stuff, but it was just exciting to be able to do that. And that's where I think for a lot of the volunteers, that's where they get again rejuvenated and energized, as they get to see their friends and colleagues from across the country and the world at these kinds of things. So highly recommend if you've never done an ASCA conference. It's expensive. I mean, it's not cheap, but you can find ways to save money. And there are resources to help you, you know, pay for some of those. But again, it's, to me, you know, I'm luckily in a good place. So even if my school won't pay for it, I can afford it. But it's the idea is like now I go because it's, you know, I get so much out of it professionally and personally that, you know, I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's fun. So as National School Counseling Week is coming up, I believe it's the first full week in February.
Correct.
So can you share some tips for counselors? Because I know sometimes we may hear, well, you know, it's, they're supposed to celebrate us. Why are we doing this? So maybe you can share some tips for some of the counselors that may be discouraged or some ideas that they could do for National School Counseling Week.
Sure. Well, it's certainly frustrating when, you know, we have usually in May, it's like Teacher Appreciation Week and, you know, teacher, and you hear about that, or, you know, even Nurse Appreciation Day, which they're this year in particular, certainly worthy, but, you know, it's pretty frustrating when you have a principal or a superintendent or whoever that doesn't, you don't get acknowledged during counseling week. You know, I joke with people, it's like, we're so important, we get a whole week, not just one day, it's a whole week. But in terms of, you know, and that, in the beginning, I was one of those that, you know, I'll put muffins in the teacher's room. I'll give you little gifts. And I'm like, why am I doing this when it's my week? I should be getting it. And it's not about the things, it's just about, like you said, about the acknowledgement. So, but that doesn't mean you can't promote what you do. And I think that's where this really comes from. It's a PR perspective. Any of you that have been around long enough to know the difference between guidance counselor and school counselor certainly know, you know, that we don't, this, our profession certainly doesn't always get a good reputation around what we do. And I think that is unfortunate because, you know, I consider myself a life changer. I consider myself a life saver. You know, I, not to get all philosophical, but, you know, the work I do saves kids from doing bad things to hurt themselves or hurt others.
Absolutely.
Can I, you know, name it and say on this day with this kid, maybe not, but over the course of time, I know I made those impressions on kids and supported them and helped them. And it could be something little and small, just saying hi or making sure they have a buddy to sit with at lunch or, you know, sitting for hours on end doing counseling. But the idea is that we do make a difference. So, no, you know, you can pat yourself on the back if you need to, but I also would be like, you know, and this is hard because you don't want to, you go to your administrator and say, can you give me a gift? Buy me lunch? Like, no, but you could be like dropping little hints like, oh, it's National Counseling Week next week, or, oh, you send them an article, or, oh, you give them a website or whatever. So the point is, if your administrators are so dense that they don't know this, then, you know, they need to be educated. You know, what we do in MASCA is we send every administrator, principal, superintendent, and director of counseling an email that says, this is National School Counseling Week, and this is what you can do. And we give them a list of several things.
Wow, so again, that's awesome.
Hard. Yeah, it is. And, you know, hopefully they at least get acknowledged, like, congratulations, thank you for all, especially this year. I mean, we're all impacted by COVID. But it's that, you know, sort of the idea of the caregivers are most impacted because we're constantly, and like I said, you got to be better than everyone else. And, you know, it's like that, you know, image of when you're on a plane, if you've flown, you know, they tell you to put your mask on before you put you, others, you know, you help others. And that's what counselors have to do. They have to take care of themselves to help others. So it's really important that, you know, and again, it might be just a little thing like a note or, you know, a bag of candy or chocolate or whatever, but it's that idea like you're getting this acknowledgement, and it could be that handwritten note or the lunch or whatever. So try, I would just say my advice is try not to do for others. Like I don't get the little gifts anymore and I don't put food in the teacher's room. Cause if that's not what that's about, but you know, the publicity part is like, you know, you doing a newsletter that says, by the way, it's National School Counseling Week, or, you know, putting up some, you know, things for the kids' sake, you know, to help educate the kids, A, not to use the G word, but also to be like, yeah, did you know that I talked to kids about X, Y, and Z? To me, if you have a good program and that you do things you should do when you should do them, then kids will know what you do. And then A, they know who you are. Like that's the first thing. B, they know what you do. And so that they don't have to be like, you know, when you ask who's your counselor and like, I don't know, I've only met them once. Well, if I've only met you once, I might not remember your name either. So, you know, and it's not about, you know, meeting them 100 times. It's about relevancy. So when you do meet with them, what do? Is it just to say hi? Or is it to lead, you know, a classroom lesson? Is it to do a group? Is it to do an individual thing? You know, obviously the more you meet with someone, the more they're likely to remember. So a senior probably will remember more than a freshman. But the idea is if what you're doing isn't relevant, then it's not, you know, it doesn't stick. So we need to, you need to make sure the kids know and appreciate what you do. So that's where some of this, like, you could get on the PA system and say, hey, it's National School Counseling Week. Let me tell you about who I am.
Yeah.
And give you a, you know, 2-minute thing about my, why, who I am, how I got here, and why do I do this work? That's something that, you know, teachers don't necessarily get to do. And something you could do if you don't have access to the intercom, you can easily get it. But that might be the kind, or doing silly games. Over the years, I've done trivia. And we would do a trivia question and kids would have to come in the office and give the answer. So, you know, we'd rotate the staff. So, you know, it's not each day there'd be a different question about a different staff member, and encourage the kids to come down and, okay, maybe they get a lollipop if they answer the question, but at least they're getting engaged and they're trying. And so there's things like that that you can do that are low impact, low budget, you know, box of lollipops from BJ's is, you know, $10 maybe.
Building relationships.
Yeah, it's exactly. And trying to have fun and show them that you're not just, you know, the counselor who sits and, you know, does your credit assessments and tells you what classes to take, or that you, you know, you can't get into college, because I hear that a lot. It was more, hopefully not as prevalent these days as it was before, but
yeah,
you know, that counselor told me I couldn't get in and look, I heard that a couple months ago. The sister had this counselor and, you know, she said she couldn't get into wherever and she went to Cornell.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure that's not probably what the counselor said, but that's what the student heard.
Yeah.
So then they didn't like this person and I get it. So anyway, there are little things that you can do, but you try really to be celebrated, not to celebrate, to make it so you, others are celebrating you. It's like they should do it because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And maybe even sharing data with the staff, like or an infograph, highlights of what your counseling team's doing and thanking them for supporting you. That's important too.
Yep. Like I said, it's just, you don't have to bring in the muffins.
No.
And I get it. It's celebratory and whatever, but then they should be bringing the muffins for you, not the other way around.
Yeah. What is something that you would like people to know that they don't know about you?
Wow. That's a tough one. I would say that I am, they probably know this, but one of my biggest passions is equity. So I mentioned earlier, I'm at a new school. I mentioned that I'm the newbie, but I'm also finding things that don't sit well. And I'm saying, well, excuse me, like this isn't equitable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I bring that lens and, you know, as long as they don't boot me off the island, but you know, there are some things that we do need to change. And so if I can, you know, bring that to the conversation and people can respectfully, you know, yeah, this is not fair. It's not equitable. My current school is both a technical and an academic in one. That's not the norm here in Massachusetts. There's usually separate schools and separate communities, but this one, is one of three with this model where they're there's many that are comprehensive, but this is really two schools in one. So there's not many of these models. So you have two principals, two co-principal really. And so there's a lot of that. Like I saw when I got there, the profile our school profile, which every school has, high school has, didn't have much about the vocational students. That's, you know, almost half of my building.
Wow.
Equally represented on the profile. Profile goes to college, yes, profile, but it goes to realtors and other people. It's not just for colleges. And there was very little about it. And I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah, like it was just highlighting the four-year.
It was highlighting the kids going to four-year schools. And I get that. I understand the concept, but it just sort of, you're not that important. And we can take, you know, almost half of our student body and write you off. Like, so that changed. I added a whole section on the vocational programs and how they operate.
That's awesome.
The kind of stuff that I would like to be known for. Not like, oh, I'm a jerk because I'm bringing this up, but like, you know, this is not fair.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need a person from the outside who's not been there forever to look at it and say, yeah, this has got to be fixed. So there's plenty of those things. I should say, there are a few of those things that we need to work on. But I do work in a good school, and they I don't think they, you know, wake up and say, let's make this student or this population, you know, discriminated against. But, you know, by doing some of the things they're doing, it is a problem. So I'm working on that. It's a slow process, but that's what I think I would like to be. My legacy is, you know, that I'm equitable and fair. And at least I also like, you know, I want to give kids, we were just talking, it's our semester break. So kids are asking to change schedules, and the way it works there is you get told no if it doesn't fit in a certain category. And then if you want to appeal that, you come to me. So I've been dealing with a lot of those lately. And, you know, just I'm saying to my staff, I want to at least hear what they have to say, even if they don't like the answer that I ultimately give, that we're teaching them lessons about how to be an advocate for themselves, how to work with adults who may not give you ultimately what you want, but you, there's a process of how you go about that. So teaching them those lessons and being fair and equitable with you.
Yeah. I think that would be an awesome legacy. And I'm sure that you will continue the work because you're already doing it. And it's so neat because when you come from an outsider, or like into a new position, you do see a lot of the things that are different, and just trying to help and fix that and advocate for the kids. So I totally get what you're saying. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
Wow. I wanted to know a lot, but in terms of me, I would just say, regardless of what your position is, you know, I don't know who all of your listeners are, but I'm going to assume many of them are educators, is that despite this really crappy situation, and this is true for anyone, not just educators, but especially those of us working in schools, I said this at a meeting I was at earlier today. Just remember, the kids have done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. They woke up 3 years ago and they were to go to school. They woke up last year and they're supposed to go to school. They're, you know, whether they are or not. We got to keep that in mind. I'm always student focused, student centered. You know, it amazes me how many things in education we do for adults, not for kids. Because it's easy for us to do it, that easier, or we don't want to be inconvenienced, so we're going to not do that. You know, and just in terms of some of the rules we have, like the one I just mentioned about switching schedules, like that's more about, yeah, you want classes to be full and you don't want to, you know, teach a class with two kids, but that's more about adults than kids. Like, kids change their mind.
You know? Yeah.
Right now in my block school, we are dealing with students who last March picked classes that, you know, almost a year later, they don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're telling them, you know, the answer is no, you can't switch because that's the rule. You picked it, you got to live with it. And I understand, you know, you let kids change and then it opens up the floodgates and where do you draw the line? So I understand it, but I'm also like, yeah, I got to learn as an adult too. I have to make the decisions I make have a repercussion or you can't get everything you want. So it's just that idea, like, at what point do we say, you know, we're here for kids, not for adults?
Yeah.
Because we don't want this teacher to have, you know, 26 kids in their classroom. Yet that's what's really best for the kid. So that's that annoys me. But anyway, I'll get over that. But just the idea, like, you know, the kid did nothing wrong. The kid's hopefully doing the best they can. And we have to remember, everybody's been traumatized by this pandemic. I don't care.
Yeah, including the adults.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they may be doing the best they can, which isn't good enough. You can sit there and judge them and be critical, but like, what are you going to do? Like, you know, it's this, you hear this when you go out to eat or when you go out to any place that has any customer service. The people that showed up today are doing the best they can.
Yes.
Which may not be what you want and may not be good enough, but either that, then, you know, they're not there or they're closed or you're not getting anything that, you know what I'm saying? So we have to be more patient and more kind, I think. And yeah, do I like waiting an hour for my food or whatever it is? No, but I'm at least getting the food rather than not getting it at all because they don't have the staff to be there. So I think we have to keep that in mind with students. I think we're often, you know, and I hope that I actually have a note on my desk after a recent staff meeting. Failure versus compassion. We're talking about, you know, end of the semester failures, and like, are some of these teachers, they're just expecting their students to be like normal, and this, you can't, I you just can't do
so
it.
So different.
Let's take the final exam and be like normal. Like, hello. so that idea, like you might have these students who are not normal in the sense that they've been traumatized, and yet you're expecting them to do that. So just be understanding and compassionate. You know, and you know, the teachers who fail kids with a 59, I'm sorry, I don't understand that. You know, make it a 57 or give them the 60, like if that's your passing grade, whatever your passing grade is. But like, you know what I'm saying? Or say, hey, I want to pass you, but you need to turn in this one piece of paper. If you do that, you get a 60 instead of just the 59. It's like, it's almost like we want to do this to you, right? I mean, like, I shake my head and I'm like, why are you in this profession if you really aren't going to help? And I get, you know, maybe you gave them every benefit of the doubt and you worked with them and all that. That's what, but it, again, it just feels bad. So
yeah, that's true.
Give kids the benefit of the doubt. You know, they're hopefully doing the best they can. And that's sometimes very frustrating. Like the kid is lazy or can't open the book or can't do their homework or whatever the issue is, but maybe have a conversation with them, develop a relationship, find out why that, you know, this is what counselors do all the time. So I'm obviously showing where I come, but come from. But the idea is let's make the kids the focus and not, it's not about you, it's about the students.
Yeah, so true. Well, at the end of our podcast, we like to do the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you tell me at least one thing that's made you happy this past week?
I'll tell you two things.
Okay.
One professionally and one sort of personally. Professionally, I mentioned earlier our record number of MASCA members, so that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1,668 members, more than we've ever had before, and that huge 92% increase.
Wow.
So that's really exciting. And that, you know, I'll take it. I'm just waiting for the number to start going down, and I'm like, oh, we got to keep these members, but we're going to keep moving forward. And then the second one I kind of alluded to earlier was just, you know, a student that I'm working with and just needed to talk and needed somebody to listen. And just that feeling like I made a difference and that, you know, just made my day in the sense like I can keep doing what I got to do, even despite all the crap we're dealing with right now and the negativity. I think that's where, you know, it's so hard. And actually, I was watching the news earlier and just, you know, whether it's our healthcare workers or, you know, the frontline workers or whoever, you know, and we just had this tragic situation where these two police officers in New York City got murdered. I mean, that I can't even imagine doing that. And I'm just like, we all have to come together. And unfortunately, without getting philosophical or political, like we have to do better. Like we as a society, as human beings, if we're going to continue this negativity, is not going to end well. I don't believe that's what we were intended to be. And so I just feel like we've got to do a better job. So, you know, do your small part. And in my case, it's, you know, helping that one, you know, that the story of the, starfish from the beach and you're throwing one in, and does it really matter when there's hundreds of thousands on the beach? But, you know, the saying is that for that one, it mattered. And I would just say, remember that you make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully many, not just one, but that you do that one kid at a time. And that, you know, I think all of us adults can remember an educator at some point making a difference. And you'll remember that for life rather than, you know, the math test you had on a certain day of the year. So
yeah.
I would say keeping the mind our students and the ones we work in, and that's what keeps me going.
Yeah, that's totally true. I'd have to say mine, Sunshine Spotlight, was I started this thing a few weeks ago. I got the idea from Eric Waldo. He had tweeted out something that said they do gratitude shout outs in their meetings. And so I started doing that with our counseling team, and they're probably like, what's going on? But I get all excited in the little wins and the big wins. So just to kind of give you an example, like I cheer for our students whenever they submit an application for college or financial aid, like I have this bell I ring for them. So we're in our counseling meeting, and a couple of our counselors got nominated for District Counselor of the Year. And so I gave them a gratitude shout out and rang my bell. But I also started in some of our groups that we do. Like I have a calm group, and we always end our groups with a gratitude shout out. And it brings the kids back to focusing on the good and focusing on gratitude, because I think that's so important to help with mental health and just focus on what we have and what we're appreciative in life. But Bob, I just want to thank you so much for being on our podcast, and I'm so excited to share your interview with the world. And I hope you have a great week. If you could just say goodbye to everyone out there listening.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Priscilla. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music and give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.